Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world.
Today, Dominic and I will be previewing some of the Vino Tinto players to watch this season in Europe and one from the Latin American region. Very happy to be joined by Dominic, as always, not here with Kevin today, but there has been lots going on in Venezuelan football in the past 2 weeks that we'll quickly run through before getting into the players to watch. Dominic, the big news obviously is Jose Pesero's resignation and his very swift replacement on an interim basis with Leo Gonzalez of Deportivo Lara. What have you made of the past few days in Venezuelan football?
I was quite sad to hear that Pesero was going to be departing. I think many of us, including both of us, had really started to grow fond of the direction it seemed like things were going with him. And certainly in the Copa America, there was a lot of affection won by him. And it's really unfortunate that didn't work out. And, you see so many of the players like reaching out and tweeting, players that said nothing when the previous manager left.
Yeah.
So clearly it's that was a sad moment. I think it became very clear quickly through reporting that the plan was then to replace him with an interim basis with a domestic coach. And when that became clear, Gonzalez was pretty quickly a nominee you heard a lot about, and it's not a bad one to me. No matter who was picked, there'd obviously be some asterisks to the excitement because it's not what we were hoping to have. But certainly an experienced manager who will know some of the players he's working with pretty well. And I'm still hopeful for, some exciting moments this next international break.
Yeah, of course. And the caveat to the sadness and the things not working out is sort of the what could have been, because ultimately the reason Pesero has left is the issue of non-payment confirmed by the federation itself, a new directive in charge of the federation for 2 months. So, not their appointment. And you could argue that 12 of those 14 months similarly is a debt that they inherited, if you like. But it's a problem that many foresaw from day one. And it's not a problem that's jumped out of nowhere. There had been comments throughout his tenure that he wasn't being paid. So in one way, we can't say it was a big surprise. More the timing is gutting, because we are less than 2 weeks away from Venezuela hosting an Argentina that we now know will contain Leo Messi. He has been called. And then traveling away to Paraguay and Peru in a triple header. Even newer news than that, today we've seen the Premier League, English Premier League, and Spain's La Liga release similar statements with ultimately the same sentiment that, as it stands, the clubs of neither league will be releasing their players for South American World Cup qualifiers because they are red-listed countries by the UK government. Spain's rationale, of course, a bit different. We're going to get into it when we preview these eight players that you've picked as ones to watch this season, but how much do you think this will benefit or, on the other hand, cost Venezuela in their three games coming up?
Yeah, look, as long one of the caveats, of course, to keep in mind is, will another major league join this list?
Yeah.
So far it's La Liga and the Premier League. Obviously, if other leagues join in, then that might change my answer a little bit. But for now, as things are, the fact is that those regulations will not affect the Venezuelan roster much. There'll essentially be one notable player that will be missing. That'll be Machis.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, if Yano Herrera had signed for a Premier League club, then he would be missing, but he looks like he wouldn't be taking part potentially either way. And a lot of the teams that we will be playing will be affected much more so than us. So, it's unfortunate to have an aspect of the competitiveness of those games be removed because teams can't have the players that they want. But, and of course, the entire context of it is sad that we're dealing with this pandemic, but at the same time, this probably provides an opportunity that could be taken advantage of. And, you know, I see no reason for Gonzalez not to do that. So I do think that there's potentially hope for, certainly because we're playing Argentina, for example, which is of course is a team that you'd be worried about playing because of their quality. The fact that we're playing a weakened side, most likely that could be missing a starting goalkeeper, you know, several starting outfield players. That's an opportunity. That's an opportunity to get a result. So
if only it was missing Messi as well.
That's true. That's true.
PSG.
He's but now, hey, last time we played them in competitive in a World Cup qualifier with him in it, that was a 1-1 draw, I believe. So
I trust you on that one.
And I think that was in Venezuela. It was the towards the end of Dudamel's last World Cup qualifier, you know, bracket when we got a couple of good results after the Youth World Cup. I want to say that was the last qualifier we played against. But anyways, yeah, we'll see. Obviously, Messi's Messi, so who knows? But
so
it'll keep things interesting.
That, well, for sure. And it looks like there's going to be a few Venezuelan defenders missing for various reasons that we won't be touching upon because they're not on your eight list of players. But John Chancellor, for example, looks like he's unlikely to feature, I was reading today. And similarly, Wilker Angel, whose future is undefined as it stands, left ACMAC Grozny at the end of last season. Currently training in Cancun in Mexico, not with a club as of yet. But let's get into your players to watch, Venezuelan players to watch this season. And kicking off is a new transfer. We'll start with Eric Ramirez, who has just signed for Dynamo Kiev, the Ukrainian champions, and the potential to play Champions League group stage football this season. Why have you picked Ramirez as one to watch?
Eric Ramirez, despite not getting a ton of chances with the national team recently, stands out as a real option to step up to the plate. And we have two or three other forwards on this list that this will be a similar point to, but certainly with him, given that he's a little older than the rest of them. This is a player who has the potential to really step into the gap that La Violentino have right now, because we're quite top heavy in terms of age with our strikers. You know, this is a younger guy playing in Europe, has great results with him so far in previous clubs. He had a great start to his Dynamo career, goal and assist in his first game. He had not been involved in a lot of competitive fixtures, which is an annoyance. I had discussed this with some Ukrainian football journalists that I had talked to for the podcast appearance I did a while back. They had mentioned that, you know, the manager at Dynamo is quite particular with his team selection, and that this was not necessarily an unheard of thing with new players. So the hope is that this is a temporary thing, and by the time we're kind of in the heat of the season, it'll be forgotten. He certainly impressed in his first appearance, so I seriously doubt that there's any real concern of you know, him being held back long term. So, you know, he's one of those players that every season he seems to be moving up the ladder in terms of European football. Ukraine, certainly the biggest league he's played in so far. And
with the Champions.
Yeah. So, and like you said, Champions League potentially for him, that's a level he hasn't had before. So it's just one, you know, obviously when someone makes a big leap in terms of their level, obviously that gets a lot of attention. But I think it's actually even more encouraging when you see a guy who's just seems to have the patience and maturity to just kind of take each step of the ladder and thrive at each step. So I'm excited to see how the season goes for him, and I'm excited to see where that ends up putting him in national team selection.
Absolutely. And your second choice on the list, Dani Perez, I feel like the two of them are going to be topic for conversation throughout their career. It's a nice comparison to be able to make as it stands, two young players both being touted as Rondon's successor. But we've sort of had this conundrum with a different aspect to it before. Can you fit Rondon and Martinez into one team? Can you fit Ramirez and Perez? Might be the future discussion to have. But on to Dani Perez, your next player to watch, signing in January for Club Bruges for $250,000. Already a Belgian title winner there, got his first goal in the second half of last season, and this will be his first full season in European football. Again, with the potential to get some Champions League minutes. What can you tell us about Dani Perez?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's really exciting to see an even younger player playing at an even, you know, there are many people that would maybe consider Belgium to be a higher rated league than Ukraine, for example, you know, playing at a pretty high level. It's not an easy league to break into. As you mentioned, he's got some decent stats from his playtime so far. Certainly for his age, you would expect not much better than that. And he's not necessarily getting a ton of minutes. He's not like starting regularly. It's mostly substitutions. But, you know, playing for a good side, he's gotten some trophies along the way, albeit as a part-time participant, but he's impressed. And, you know, I think something that's significant about this move that isn't unheard of necessarily in the past, but it's good to continue to see it develop is, you know, I remember when we, way early on when we were doing this podcast, when we talked to Alex Stewart in review of the 2020 final, the league final. And we briefly, at some point in there, we talked about, you know, what he saw the potential for League of Football players to directly move to Europe. And because obviously the dream would be that they all, you know, do like a Cordova and they just go straight to the Bundesliga or whatever. But sometimes it doesn't work out. And he had mentioned that he expected perhaps a slightly lower level would be the better entry point. I think that's, I suppose Belgium is a slightly lower entry level, but I think it's proving true in a good way here because you're seeing a guy who's come straight from Metropolitanos, not even playing there that long, straight into a much higher rated league, and he's doing well. The club seem to like him. They do a lot of video work with him, and you know they seem to really embrace him as a long-term project for them. So having him get that exposure and impressed during that exposure, I think is really encouraging. I think it's going to be a while until he's a main player, probably say in the national team, just because of his lack of experience. But at the same time, I like you're saying, I think in a few years, 4 or 5 years, he's probably going to be a guy we're talking about like every time we talk about the national team.
Absolutely. And the encouraging thing with him is although he's not getting those starts in the first team, he had a goal scoring preseason. And you know, that was with the first team. And similarly, I saw him play for Club Next, the secondary side at the weekend, and again scored. So when he is getting those opportunities to start, he is scoring. So that's encouraging to see because it's more worrying when strikers are getting lots of minutes and not scoring rather than coming in and out of the team and just getting those opportunities. Right. He seems to be taking them.
And once Bruges are more active in the Champions League, domestic cup, all that stuff, once the fixtures start to become more bunched, mm-hmm. it's probably like we'll see some starts for him. Okay. It's just, it's early on and those things aren't happening right now. So mid-season will probably be a more active time for him.
On to our third player and one with question marks over exactly what the season is going to look like. Yangel Herrera, owned by Manchester City. Speculation and more so than speculation earlier in the window that he would be joining a Premier League club, Crystal Palace, where we were told by a reliable source very close to signing him. That now seems a world away. West Ham again, but it seems as if the opportunity to join an English club is slipping away. There's only 7 days left of the window. I know there are options elsewhere in Europe for him, but we also have the uncertainty over whether he's going to make the final cut for the Venezuelan national team. It's almost, you know, being spoken as if fact that he won't be, mainly because of this stress fracture that he picked up in the Copa America, which has been a hindrance to him signing with a Premier League club so far as well. But still, on your list as a Venezuelan player to watch in Europe this season, and with good reason, probably more for what he's achieved in the past 2 years and his upwards trajectory than perhaps an exciting summer.
Yeah, obviously there's a lot we don't know yet about what his what the next year of his career is going to look like. But that doesn't change that this is probably one of the most exciting young Venezuelan footballers out there and extremely skillful and intelligent, passionate player. That, you know, I've said it before. I know a lot of other people said it before. You know, this is like long-term, potentially captain material. This, you know, that's the level we, and at a youth level, he's already done that, but certainly at senior level, I think that's a long-term possibility. It's unfortunate that that things seem to not be playing out from the Premier League angle. Of course, that was exciting given that recently there hasn't been Venezuelan representation in that league. And I guess fingers crossed that maybe that somehow ends up working out. But if it doesn't, you know, I think it's important to, once that happens, if that happens, to put that aside and focus on the positive momentum of wherever he ends up, because we're still talking about a player who managed over the course of a couple seasons to make his way from Liga Footvey to a decent MLS player to suddenly a regular starter in La Liga for a quite strong performing side in Granada that even made it to the Europa League. So, you know, he's developed so quickly. And of course, has been a great asset for the national team as well. If he ends up landing in a location that is not as flashy as what we were hoping, again, I understand that people would be disappointed. I'll be disappointed. But I think it's important if that happens to then just move on and focus on, you know, the positives. Obstacles happen. Unfortunately, he got injured in a really unlucky time for his career. And I still think wherever he ends up, we're still going to see another good season from him. We're still going to be seeing a player that once he's healthy is very capable of having a huge impact on the Vino Tinto and whatever club he lands at. So, yeah, it's definitely a move to continue to watch wherever he ends up.
Yeah, I think with the window getting ever so close to closing as well for most of the major European leagues, it's probably likely now that it will be a loan rather than a permanent transfer is what I think. What I'd like to see as well is he go to a club or a league at least, but, you know, with a proven track record with Venezuelans. And, you know, someone might say, well, what does that look like? Like, how do you have a proven track record? But what I mean by that is, you know, we often see talented Venezuelans not get opportunities in certain leagues, even when they go there, or you know, not get the same amount of opportunity. So hopefully he goes somewhere, because he's deserved it with the past two seasons he's had with Granada. You know, Europa League, far into the knockout stages, one of their best players alongside another Venezuelan, Darwin Machis. He deserves a decent move this window. So I very much hope he gets it and he's not taken somewhere as a squad rotation player, because that wouldn't be right at this stage in his career.
Yeah.
Moving on. And I'm going to jump across the border from Spain into, well, I say across from Spain, talking as Yangel being a Granada player last season, into Portugal with Mikel Villanueva, centre-back at Santa Clara, also capable of playing left-back. We only saw a little bit of him over the summer because of the COVID pandemic with the national team, him being a casualty of, well, a pandemic within itself in the national team with so many absences. He had a very good season in Portugal last year. What are you expecting from him in this second season? Because if I remember rightly, Santa Clara were newly promoted to the league last season. It was their first season. I might be wrong on that, but
he's, you know, I'm not sure, but certainly they achieved, I think, higher last season than expected. They got into the qualifiers for the Europa Conference League. Which they're still taking part in as of now. So we don't know whether they made the competition proper yet. But yeah, so, you know, last season was a very strong one for him after he'd spent some time a little bit in limbo, in my opinion. He had been one of a couple of Venezuelans that kind of were on and off part of Malaga for a couple of years, and it wasn't quite clear where he was headed. Wasn't playing a lot. And Malaga at that point were not in La Liga. They were in the second division. So it's been very encouraging to see him step up to first division football in Portugal now, perform very well. He had a very strong season, club did well. You know, this season, it will be interesting to see how the club season goes. Santa Clara have not had a great start, although I think a lot of that can be chalked up to the fact that they're dealing with conference league and league play at the same time. So, you know, might expect a lower table finish than last season. They were like sixth, so maybe we're thinking a little lower than that. But still a player to watch. And as there, it feels like there's a lot of uncertainty about who should be starting in Vino Tinto's defense right now. Something that's going to be helped along by the fact that some candidates aren't going to be able to make the break, apparently. But he's, I think, reemerged as a really serious candidate after a period where maybe it didn't seem like he was. And he's a multi-positional player, which is also a great asset. So, you know, I think it's spent a little bit less of a dream run in league play this season, but still look out for how Santa Clara do domestically. Look out for how deep they manage to go in the Conference League. They've been doing well in that competition. So, and for those, you know, trying to get into that new competition, this is potentially an entry point you can follow Venezuela along the way. But yes, very talented player who was a little unfortunate with his club career for a couple of years now, and is starting to find his third gear again, or whatever the saying is.
Yes, and your perfect summary triggered my realization of my mistake. Wasn't Santa Clara's first season back in the top flight, but of course Villanueva's moving up from the second tier in Spain to right. The in Portugal, and in fact actually helped Santa Clara to their best league finish ever in Portugal, of sixth, and the quarterfinals of the cup. So to better that this season would be a big ask, but certainly, like you said, one to watch, particularly in these September World Cup qualifiers. I think Copa America 2019, him and Osorio were particularly impressive. I think he was one of the casualties, really, of the changes in formation, and also then with COVID this summer. So hopefully a better international season for him ahead. Back to Granada now for your next one to watch. And of course, Darwin Machis. Talk of him potentially moving this summer, but so far he has stayed put. What are we expecting from Machis this season, back to being the sole Venezuelan at Granada?
Yeah, you know, there's a similarity to what I was mentioning about Villanueva, in the sense that Darwin Machis is a player that for a couple seasons in terms of club play, it felt like was a little bit afloat, had a sort of stop-start period at Udinese right before joining Granada. And since joining Granada, has really found his feet and has been playing consistently, doing relatively well. Certainly paired up with Herrera very well last year. So, you know, he's not loaned to them. He's signed to them, so he's still there. And I expect good things from him. He's very much fighting for a starting spot of that team, which is, you know, obviously hard for a player, but at the same time, perhaps good motivation for him. And had good bursts last season, did have some runs where he wasn't really getting in goal involvements or anything like that. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where the stats land for him this season. But either way, I think it's very encouraging that a player of his talents and his potential is getting minutes in La Liga, representing Venezuela in La Liga. And I think if Granada managed to keep the pace and continue to perform strongly, he'll certainly be a part of that journey for them, even if it's not always as a starter. I believe he started one game this season and been a substitute one game this season. So might be a bit of both, but I think he can handle that given he's been at clubs before where the team didn't want to play him in the first place. So I think he has the maturity to understand that challenge and to fight his way through it.
Yeah, and his dribbling stats and like key pass stats in league football last season were very high. It was literally only the likes of Messi et al. That were above him. So undoubtedly going to prove vital to them again this season. Popping back across the border to Portugal, which is a theme that will continue, to Boa Vista and young Heriel de Santis. Sadly, similarly with Dani Perez, not going to see him at the under-20 Sudamericano, the South American Championships, this year, as it has now officially been cancelled, I think, since we recorded our last podcast together. That would have been a real opportunity for the wider world to see him. South American international tournaments are always a football hipster's favourite, if you like, and all eyes are on it. Unfortunately, we're not going to see him. So what can you tell us about De Santis at Boa Vista?
Well, you know, on the note of that cancellation, I think that that's why what's happening now in his career is actually very well timed in terms of club play, because we're seeing at Boa Vista that he's actually getting a decent amount of minutes so far this season. both in league and cup play. He's always as a substitute, but he's been substituted into every match, and then multiple matches with, you know, real substitution, you know, 15, 20 minute substitution, not 2 minutes at the end.
Yeah.
And the cherry on top of all that, of course, is that he recently got his first senior team goal. And it was actually quite a good goal. Originally called offside, and VAR made it a goal, called it onside. But, you know, made a long run down the wing. It's kind of a solo run with the ball, beat the keeper, kind of snuck it past the keeper's foot, and, you know, showed a lot of talent in that moment, and has shown talent his whole time at Bavista, but often in brief moments or in the reserve team. So it's good to see him starting, or not starting, but playing more. I noted today, by accident, really, that, you know, Bavista have made a couple moves. They've moved a couple players out of the club. One that is notable for this conversation is Albert Delis, who is one of their starting forwards, who I know of because he used to play in MLS for years. And he's been loaned to Bordeaux in France. So, you know, little notes like that, moves like that, are potentially a big reason we're going to see a little more of DeSantis this season, a little less competition for those striker minutes. And, you know, much like with Perez, I don't necessarily think this is a player that we're going to immediately be seeing like starring for the national team anytime soon, but it's good to see that development. And certainly, again, with the point that of the cancellation, from an international standpoint, the fact that he is going to be getting some minutes for his club is really important, I think, to substitute for that. So we're not going to get those key starts for him for the national team, but he is going to be able to show himself off a little bit in a relatively high-rated league. So again, I think this is a guy that 5-6 years from now is going to be a really important character, and I think we're seeing the first steps of that now.
Yeah, and what intrigues me about DeSantis is he's been spoken about from, you know, within Venezuelan football circles now for at least 2 years. I remember when I came out to Venezuela in 2019, before I came, DeSantis was one that I was told to watch. He barely played any league football in Venezuela before Bavista paid $1 million for him. He only got minutes here and there, and I was, in that sense, lucky to see him. But it was in a cup game, and he was very, very raw. He's a tall player, 190 centimetres, and, you know, this was nearly two years ago now, so he's filling out his figure now. But back then, you know, you could see that he had an awkward gait, he ran hunched, and he's filling out that figure now. And I think that's what's really important in the next stage of his development. Dani Perez went through that physical transformation last year, making the most of the COVID pandemic to work out from home, and added that bulk. And I think that's what DeSantis needs to make that step up. In terms of longevity in Europe, eligible for an Italian passport, that could be crucial going forward when, you know, different countries have different eligibility rules. Hopefully he can establish himself in Portugal. It's not been the easiest country at times for Venezuelan strikers to establish themselves in. Moving on, and our first and only Venezuelan to feature outside of Europe, Otero. Romelu Otero has moved to Mexico's Club Azul after an interesting few years in terms of movement. Hasn't always been plain sailing for the Scorpion. Excited for another name in Mexican football?
Yeah, you know, I think, as you noted there, he's had a very complicated club road in the last couple of years. Not necessarily for not playing. He's played a pretty normal amount, but being loaned out to Saudi Arabia, comes back to Atletico Mineiro, and then doesn't seem to be quite wanted, goes to Corinthians for a bit, now this move. You know, understandably, the optics of a move to any North American league are going to be a little duller than if he had, say, stayed in Brazil or moved to Europe or anything like that. But I think this is actually could be a really positive move for him. Cruz Azul is a pretty successful club overall in Mexico. They had a rough patch in sort of the late 2000s, but now they've been quite competitive. They won a couple North American trophies, a couple domestic trophies. and are just widely regarded as a good team, even when they don't necessarily win silverware. So I think, you know, he's making a move to a place where he's probably going to get good minutes. He's going to play in still quite a good league. I mean, Liga MX is widely considered the best league in North America. This is a league that used to send its clubs to the Copa Libertadores. You know, I mean, you know, it's not necessarily something to roll your eyes at. So I think that this is a guy that's already very talented, already quite developed. I don't think he needs to go to a place where he's going to learn how to play. He already knows what he is. He already knows how to do what he does. I think what's important to him is to stay active and get those minutes, play football. He's going to get that there. And I think it'll help him stay active, stay available, stay relevant to Livinho Tinto, which I think is important, because even if he's not always going to be starter material, you know, even in the Copa America, we saw this a bit. He is a vital option to have in the book, to have available in games where you need someone who's a little tricky, who's a little clever. And so I think that this will be a good move for him. And by the way, Venezuela's moving to Mexico for club football has worked out quite well for Venezuela recently. I mean, look at Arisa Dreta. He's been playing there for a little while now. Yeah. And we basically relied on him for an entire tournament. So, you know, I don't think this is even any sign of Otero's time with the national team diminishing even. I think he could still have plenty of time ahead of him, just perhaps playing at a level that is a little different than maybe what some would have expected.
And it's not out of the question that he could be a CONCACAF Champions League winner in a couple of games' time. They're 1-0 down to Monterrey after the first leg of the semi-final. He didn't feature. That was on the 11th of August. So it was very, very soon after he signed, potentially even just before. I've lost track of time for obvious reasons the past 2 weeks, moving through time zones. For those who don't know, I'm now living in Venezuela. I actually recorded the last podcast the day before I left England and scheduled it. So I had to look at the bottom screen to even know what the date was. 24th of August. This podcast is literally going live within 2 hours of us finishing recording. Last on the list, a player that I was following closely this summer to see where he turned up, mainly because of a very impressive summer, again, albeit affected with COVID. Nahuel Ferraresi has stayed in Portugal. At times, there were rumours that he was going to France, and at times, there were rumours he was going to Spain, but he stayed in Portugal, albeit with a different club, this time Estoril. But very much one to watch, and I think probably establishing himself in the next 12 months as a starting 11 player for the national team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this move is good for him. Of course, there were some potentially exciting ideas of him moving to bigger leagues, and hopefully that happens in the future. But I think another year to establish, hey, I have the quality to be competitive in this league, it won't hurt. I think it'll only be helpful. The year before, he was very impressive with Moreirense. I don't speak Portuguese. I have no idea how to pronounce that. But he was very good with them, also in the first division in Portugal after a couple of years at different levels of the game. At one point, he was in the second division of Portugal, third division of Spain. So getting second year, first division football in the book, they've had a pretty solid start. He made his first start recently. He had been a substitute prior, and they won that game, 3-1, I believe. I think, and he's so young still at 22, I believe. So I think this is a really positive mark. If the season goes well, this is a newly promoted team, by the way, as well. So that'll be an interesting environment to see him deal with. If this season goes well, which for them, I imagine would be, you know, achieving safety, maybe a top half finish, which he managed the previous season. I think he could enter the next summer in a much better position to negotiate potentially a move to France, move to Italy. Once he has a little more of a portfolio at the higher level in Europe, which he just doesn't quite have yet. I imagine I don't imagine that his near future is to actually play for City, who own him, but I think that what he's doing is making a very solid portfolio to actually get a position at a solid club in Ligue 1 or wherever it may be. So I think that's a very exciting future for him. And in the meantime, this season should be fun to watch. He's a multi-positional player, which is always entertaining. He's a fullback and center back, and very talented. Scored a couple of goals last season, actually. Kind of deadly in the box when he's up there. So very entertaining player, and definitely a player that I think in a couple of years will be, or maybe even now, but certainly as he gets to maturity and other players maybe get a little older, will be a must-have in the back line for Livio Tinto.
Definitely. And curiously, Estoril have also managed to include a option to buy in the transfer of, I believe, 4 million euros, if I've remembered correctly. But a nice, probably nice way to dovetail into our final point. We've gone through our list of eight, but it's probably worth mentioning our predictions for the upcoming World Cup qualifiers. It's a triple header. Of course, things may continue to change as they are now in this COVID world that we live in. But we are hosting, Venezuela are hosting Argentina, then traveling away to face Paraguay and Peru. What are your hopes and what are your predictions for the three games?
Yeah, you know, when I looked at the fixtures, I still think my initial thought is with what I thought we were going to be playing them with the coaching staff we had up until a week ago. So I'm trying to kind of adjust that for what I know the situation to be now. But of course, like you mentioned, that's also changing like every 3 hours. So I don't even know what these teams are necessarily going to look like, certainly Argentina particularly. But I think after the previous World Cup qualifiers ended, which were not on a great note, I think we looked at this chunk in that contest and we're thinking, well, try to have a respectable result against Argentina, whether that's actually getting points or not. And then, you know, do the business against Peru and Paraguay. I think that's still realistically what the goal needs to be. At the same time, like I said before, look, this is not going to be the Argentina squad that won the Copa America. So who knows? If you can get points or a point against them at home, potentially with fans, that could be an absolutely huge moment of momentum for this team, particularly given some of the challenges that have interrupted that momentum recently. I know that's a lot to ask, but I know it's possible. And I do think if they can manage it, even if it's another 1-1 draw, as I believe happened last time, I think that could be a really powerful moment for this group, which had a lot of character building in the Copa America, albeit with a very different group of players. So I am hoping for maybe a draw against Argentina. And those other two games, those are must wins. You kind of have, I mean, if we want to really be realistic about like, hey, we can still make the World Cup, you kind of got to win those. Yeah. Those are the teams you have to be better than, realistically. You're not, Argentina's going to finish above us on the table no matter what.
Yeah.
But Peru, Paraguay, Chile, the Nets break, those are the teams you have to be better than. So far, we haven't been particularly lucky against them in previous qualifiers, but you know, Paraguay is a game we really shouldn't have lost. Chile, we beat, obviously, the first time. So I think I want at least a win out of those two for sure. I think we can beat Paraguay, for example. Mm-hmm. Peru is going to be a little tougher. Again, though, I think that's a game you can get points from. Argentina, I don't know. So I guess my prediction, to get around to a natural prediction, is at least 4 points out of those three games. I think you need to at least really make an effort for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if I remember correctly from when I was trawling through the facts around Copa America a couple of months ago, if I'm remembering correctly, I don't think Venezuela have picked up points against Peru outside of Venezuela before. Certainly, mm-hmm. I think it's a win. I don't think Venezuela have beaten Peru outside of Venezuela before. And we've not played them yet, this set of qualifiers. Paraguay, of course, lost to in gut-wrenching, heart-wrenching circumstances, Yangel Herrera having a goal ruled against late on, and then, of course, having a penalty saved in Paraguay, sucker-punching with a goal in the final 10 minutes. But they are going to be almost certainly without, you know, Miguel Marón. So hopefully we can capitalise on that and not be affected by any further leagues not allowing their players. I think MLS, of course, would be the big one to hamper Venezuela.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, obviously, if MLS suddenly joined that list, obviously that'd be a really huge problem. At the same time, I haven't heard anything about that happening. So that, you know, hopefully, obviously this is only a week away. So hopefully if that were to happen, that would have come out by now. But I think as long as the MLS situation doesn't happen, frankly, other than maybe Portugal, any European league joining that list mostly would hurt our opponents more than us. Mm-hmm. A lot of our roster is MLS and Portugal. And of course, there's the domestic roster that came out as well. So, you know, I do think that that's maybe a little morbidly, but it is a thing that would benefit us more than it would hurt us if that were to happen. But yeah, hopefully the list of leagues that do that stops at the two that have, so that we can beat Argentina with Messi there.
That would be lovely. And I'm hoping I can go. They've said tonight that the El Olimpico, the stadium in Caracas that will be hosting the game, will have 6,000 in capacity. So just got to see what the rules are on that and the costs as well. It looks like fans are going to have to, you know, take a COVID test, whether they're vaccinated or not, for example. So let's just see how they administer that and the costings. Otherwise, I will enjoy it within Venezuela, but on the TV. And our next episode, this being a fortnightly, every other week podcast, will fall at the end of that triple header. So we will be reviewing those three games and hopefully we have something to celebrate.
Celebrating 9 points. Yeah. 9 points, baby.
That would be it would certainly be the best the Venezuelan football since I've been following.
Yeah.
Well, until then, thank you very much. As always, Dominic, a pleasure.
Thank you.